Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to this edition of our English feature program. I'm Philippa Hitchin. Coming up today, the scourge of sex abuse. Just how much progress has the Church made in tackling this crisis and ensuring the safety of children in its care? Hear from participants at a Rome conference on child protection and from English Cardinal Cormac Murphy O'Connor, who's been leading an investigation into the abuse scandals in Ireland. English Cardinal Cormac Murphy O'Connor has urged Catholics around the world to pray for the Church in Ireland as it seeks to recover and reform in the wake of the devastating clerical sex abuse crisis. The Cardinal is one of six Catholic Church leaders appointed by Pope Benedict to lead an investigation into the causes of abuse within Ireland's major dioceses and religious congregations. On Monday, the Vatican announced that this so-called apostolic visitation has concluded its first stage and that the initial reports have been submitted to Vatican officials. The visitation was first announced by Pope Benedict in a March 2010 pastoral letter to Irish Catholics, after two reports revealed widespread abuse of minors on the part of members of the clergy and church employees stretching back decades. By early 2012, the Vatican says it will publish a synthesis of the results of the reports, as well as future prospects regarding a nationwide mission announced by the Pope in his pastoral letter. I spoke to Cardinal Cormac Murphy O'Connor, who has been overseeing the investigation in the Archdiocese of Armagh.
It was clearly a very important visitation, not just for Armagh, but for the other dioceses that the other visitors went to. All of us have made a report to the Holy See, and it'll be up to the Holy See now to make a response, as the Holy Father has promised to do. I think on a wider scale, the Church in Ireland has been through a horrendous time. And it's very hard to say, you know, there's an immediate recovery. It'll take time, it'll take good leadership, it'll take the gift of the Spirit and sincere repentance. And the Church is always, they say, always being reformed, always being renewed. And that will happen in Ireland as well. It's happened in other parts of the Church in times of history. I think it'll happen in Ireland as well. But it will take time and take honesty, transparency with regard to dealing with issues of child abuse. But I think it also needs our prayers as well for a country which I love very much, and for the Church in Ireland, which in the past has done so much for the Catholic Church all over the world with regard to missionaries and everything else. So I think the Church in Ireland needs our prayers, and those prayers will be for the gift of the Spirit, for a real renewal of life and grace, and those things which the Church gives for wholeness and for truth and for love.
Leader of the Church in England when it was going through a similar time of crisis following sex abuse revelations there. What do you think, looking back, perhaps are the key ingredients in this path to recovery, on this journey to recovery, to reconciliation, to reform within the Church?
Well, I think, first of all, one clearly has to deal absolutely transparently with issues of child abuse, which we do and have done in England and Wales with the recommendations, the procedures that we have in place now, cooperation with local authorities, and nothing held back. So I think there's confidence, not just in the Catholic community, but in the society at large, that the Catholic Church, with regard to voluntary organisations, probably has the best procedures for dealing with this terrible thing of child abuse that anybody has. So I think, first of all, with regard to procedures for child abuse, that's got to be dealt with absolutely ruthlessly, if you like, because child abuse is such a terrible, terrible thing, especially for the victims. And I think, secondly, one of the greatest sadnesses of it is that the Catholic Church in particular, through the ages, especially over the last centuries, has been its care for children. educating children, care for children. And the Catholic Church all over the world, particularly in developing countries in Africa, its schools, its healthcare, it's contributed so much. So I think in England, what lessons we learn is encouraging and caring for children, and also contact, vital contact with young people is a sign that the church is alive.
Cardinal Cormac Murphy O'Connor, former Archbishop of Westminster. Sexual abuse of children will always remain a threat and a challenge for the church, just as it is within all other sectors of society. That stark realization was one of the driving forces behind a 5-day conference that took place here in Rome last week, bringing together experts and representatives from English-speaking bishops' conferences in over 20 countries right across the world. The annual Anglophone Conference on the Safeguarding of Children and Vulnerable Adults was hosted this year by the Church in England and Wales. It focused on ways in which national churches can learn from each other to provide the most effective protection against potential abusers, as well as bringing support and healing to victims.
I am proud that the Church is trying with all its strength to fight this issue, and to say that the wounds of the victims are Christ's wounds.
Among the key speakers at the closed-door meeting was Baroness Patricia Scotland, former British Attorney General and recently appointed chair of the National Catholic Safeguarding Commission in the UK. I caught up with her to find out about the achievements of this conference and the challenges that lie ahead.
I think it's been of critical importance that you've had people from the five corners of the earth literally come together to talk about safeguarding, its importance, to respond to the letter that's been issued on the 16th of May, which is calling upon every single country to come forward with their guidelines in relation to how we're going to respond to victims and deal with this issue in relation to safeguarding. There was a huge spirit and commitment at this conference from all the participants. And we had cardinals and archbishops and bishops and monsignors and lay people and experts all coming together to better understand the pernicious nature of abuse, which is in our communities broadly, but also therefore represented in the church, and how to deal with it, how to grapple with it, how to support victims, how to enable them to heal.
Can we talk about this as a priority for the church today, do you think, a top priority?
Absolutely. I think when His Holiness came to the United Kingdom, you know, one of the first things he did was to go and speak with victims. The fact that canon law has been materially changed in the last 7 years, and very strict and clear guidance has been given through canon law as to how it should be dealt with. We've been talking about how important the vulnerable, particularly children, are, how tenderly they must be treated, and how Christ himself made them a top priority. And so, of course, the church is anxious about this and is trying through conferences like this Anglophone conference to better understand the whole phenomenon of abuse so that we can better understand how to respond to it.
As you say, the guidelines are there. The difficulty perhaps is in compliance, particularly in countries where these subjects are still almost totally taboo.
But I think it's to understand that a number of countries are at different stages of that journey. Some countries have now had to deal with this issue for a while, and they have put in place guidelines and protocols, and the importance is making sure they are of general application and well understood. There are other countries where things are still not talked about. And I'm not talking about the church, because the church is wanting to deal with this, but within communities themselves. If you think back at how many people responded to domestic violence or rape, there is a huge issue in our communities about denial that these things take place. So one of the issues we were looking at is, how do we educate our populations? How do we create an environment which will encourage people to feel able to come forward and disclose? How do we enable victims to understand it is not their fault if they are subjected to abuse, and that they are not responsible for the abuse visited on them by the abuser? Many victims still think it's their fault. So I think there are a number of societal, community and church issues to deal with, and it's moving all of us together, understanding that if we are all to be in a different place, we're going to have to learn together. And it's not just the clergy, it is the community. How do we, as members of the community, better challenge, better identify what we need to do? So we're looking at how to build resilience, how to better prevent, how do we train those who come into the church, how do we sift those who should not work within the church? And it's not talking about the priests and the religious, but we have janitors and caretakers and people who work in our boarding schools and people who look after our children and people we employ, people who become part of the congregation and the laity. And we have to, I think, better understand that this is part of what happens in our humanity, and we've got to face that fact and challenge it.
You had significant success, didn't you, during your years as Attorney General in reducing, in tackling and reducing the problem of domestic violence in the UK. Is this more difficult, do you think, and is it as easy to find solutions?
I think anything that deals with intimacy between individuals and abuse is never going to be easy. But I think what we believe, and what this conference believes, is we can do something about it. We can reduce it, we can contain it. We will never eradicate it from the human response of behaviors, of course we won't, but we can make sure that we can better protect against it, we can better identify it, and then when and if we find it, we can deal with it more effectively, more robustly, and we can deal with it earlier. Because one of the advantages of understanding abuse and understanding the signs that are indicative of abuse is you can intervene at an earlier stage. And if you intervene at an earlier stage, you better protect the victims, but you also prevent the perpetrator from entering into a pattern of behaviour which is very difficult to get out of. And you stop them early, before they have had an opportunity to abuse more. It doesn't mean there's a panacea. I don't think it is more difficult. What my work with domestic violence teaches me is it is doable. But it is only doable if all of us work together.
You're bringing your wealth of legal experience to this job as chair of the Safeguarding Commission, but you're also coming at it from a Catholic perspective. Has this ever challenged your faith, or have you ever found your faith in some ways in conflict with your professional decisions?
No, I think my faith has informed my work. Christ loved children. The protection of children is one of the most important parts of his ministry. If you look at when he got really mad, he got mad when people hurt a child, when they wanted to stop children from coming to him. And he said, before you can come to the kingdom of heaven, you will have to be like one of these children. So all the work that I have done in relation to reducing child abuse is absolutely consistent with my faith and everything I have always been taught to believe and do believe about what being a Christian really means. It means about loving people in an appropriate way. And to love is to protect, is to care for, is to nurture. And one of the most painful things about abuse is when someone abuses a child, it limits that child's capacity to be fully themselves and to be fully what God intended them to be, which is a thing of beauty and wonder. And it often prevents that child from giving to the world what that child would be able to give to the world had they not been abused. So I think it's a fundamental part of my belief that we as a church, as the body of Christ, must strain every muscle to make sure that we're there to love, to protect, to nurture, and to enable children to grow to be the people that God wants them to be. I think one of the reasons that people are so pained by abuse when it happens within the church is because it may make those who should love God feel less able to do that. And that is a huge, huge deprivation, because you're not just abusing the person physically, you're abusing their soul and their spirit in a way that may be lastingly damaging. So I am proud that the church is trying with all its strength to fight this issue and to stand up for Christ and to say that the wounds of the victims are Christ's wounds and that we must do everything we can to change it. It doesn't mean that we'll be perfect. And I think the best way to look at this is that we are on a journey. Just as we were on a journey when I started to try and make a difference with all the other people that helped on that journey to make a difference for domestic violence. We did that. We did reduce it. We did reduce the pain. We did reduce the... But it's not something that's over. You can't take your foot off the pedal and say it's done. I think the big message is this will never be done. We have to do it every day of every year, of every millennium, because if you look back at 1107, I think it was, there was issues with... This was an issue then. Nothing's changed. We've just got to be better about dealing with it.
People who want to abuse children are always going to be around. We have to do all that we can to make sure that they don't have any opportunity within the life of the church to be able to do what they want to do.
Archbishop Philip Wilson of Adelaide in Australia is president of the Bishop's Conference and has been in the forefront of the church's response to the sex abuse crisis for the past 15 years.
I think one of the really important achievements of this work is to come to a better knowledge of what the phenomenon of child sexual abuse is about, how these people think and operate, and how we need to work out ways of responding effectively in such a way that we really care for the victims and that that's a high priority, that we deal effectively with the perpetrators and that we do that in cooperation with the civil governments and legislations that exist around the world, but also that we shift our process, as we have over the last 10 years, towards more effective ways of being able to actually help children in their lives to be protected from this, so that we're able to give communities better standards, better processes to make sure that children who come with the ambience of the life of the Catholic Church are well protected.
Do you feel that you've achieved that in Australia? As you say, you've been dealing with it for a couple of decades now.
I don't think that Australia is the only place. I think that if you look carefully at what's been going on in the life of the Church Universal over the last years, that there have been tremendous achievements that have happened. And even the most recent declaration of the Congregation of the Doctrine of the Faith, asking bishops worldwide to respond, to give evidence of what they've done, encouraging them to be engaged with civil authorities, this is all to the good and very important development.
You're talking about victim support for those who have been abused, for their families, the communities that have really been torn apart by this. Tell us about some of the most successful stories you've had of helping people really work through this.
The first thing I'd say in relationship to victims is that it's really hard for us to imagine what happened to a person when, as a child, that they were abused sexually by somebody. It doesn't matter who they are and where they come from, but if there's someone who has a religious significance in their life, it would make it all the worse. I can't begin to understand the total devastation that must create in a person's life. And so therefore I think that we need to be aware of that whenever we're looking at the issue about making a response to people who have been abused, and realising that it will take a long time in the cases of many for healing to take place. And in fact, that there may be some people who will always be angry. We have to accept that and to love them and care for them and do all that we can in our community to make up for the lack of trust and betrayal that occurred because they were abused by somebody who was associated with the church. It's a hard work, but it's a work that we must be committed to all over the world and just keep at it and to respond to all these people with love and care.
Within the church, it's also caused huge divisions, hasn't it, in terms of trust between bishops and priests, priests and lay people. How much do you think, in your own particular context, are you beginning to get over that and, if you like, heal from that as well?
Look, I think that if there are issues about a lack of trust between peoples in the church, that it's a very big opportunity for us to reflect on the image of the life of the church that was given to us by the deliberations of the bishops at Second Vatican Council. Our church begins through the baptism of every person who comes into the church. The common dignity and responsibility we have comes about as a result of that. It's only secondarily that the church then is talked about being hierarchical and people have different responsibilities. It seems to me that the really big moment that is presented to us by this is an opportunity for all of us in the church who are linked by the common priesthood of the faithful through our baptism to be reconciled, to commit ourselves to love. Because in the end, it's not structures or procedures that are going to make the difference. In the end, it'll be the quality of the love that we have for God and for one another. And that means that all of us have to be engaged in the process of repentance. And if people in the church who have special responsibility, like bishops and clergy, have failed, then we who hold those major responsibilities in the church must now do all that we can to overcome those problems by our commitment to do what's right and to ask forgiveness from those who have been hurt in the past.
What happens to the church in Australia? What happens to the church in Ireland? What happens to the church in England, in India? Happens to all of us in this mystical body.
Archbishop George Mapundu of Lusaka, Zambia, was attending the Anglophone Safeguarding Conference for the first time, together with other representatives of the church in his country. Given how little we hear in the media about this problem in African nations, I asked him just how serious a challenge the sex abuse crisis is for the church in Zambia.
We do have our own problems, problems of a young church, you know, with our teething problems. First of all, the lack of vocation. So we don't have so many priests, a diocesan priest, probably about 300-400 at most. That's part of it. Even religious congregations, they were coming in greater numbers in the 30s and 40s and 50s. After the 60s, the numbers have gone down. So cases of abuse of children and vulnerable adults or youth, I think they have been there, but they are very few and far in between. But this is not the reason to be complacent. This is the time to learn from sister churches, how they are managing these issues so that we don't try to reinvent the wheel. We share experiences and we compare notes in view of having almost like standard ways of reacting to these situations, reacting by way of response, but also being proactive. This is a human problem. And it is not a problem that started yesterday. It goes back centuries. It is with humanity, you know. So how do we form people? How do we inform the laity? How do we inform and form the religious and the clergy so as to make them much more aware of the presence of elements within humanity that are inimical to the interests of children, the youth, and vulnerable adults?
You say there's very little evidence so far of abuse cases, but it's also true that in European countries the problem was considered to be much less than it was for many years, and that possibly there may be cases under the surface because this is still in many cases a taboo subject. Is that a possibility in your case, do you think, in your country?
It is certainly a possibility. But it is also important to note that our problems, though similar, are different. What we would find as prevalent or much more prevalent than the abuse of children, let's say in the Western world, will be more cases of infidelity among the clergy in terms of their vows of celibacy. Not long ago we had this report, the National Catholic report brought out. Everyone knows about that.
Talking about abuse of sisters, of women religious particularly.
Not only sisters, women religious, but also of women by priests in a region of about 25 countries in Southern Africa. Reading that report, one could see, I think this happened in such and such a diocese, because I come from there. Okay, so what you see there, I'm not talking so much about the report itself as what it represents in terms of problems, is a problem with celibacy for local priests. So for us, that would be the bigger problem of priests being involved with grown-up women, adult women. This is, for us, more of a problem than that of children.
This is sometimes labelled or looked at as a cultural question for Africa particularly, isn't it? How do you respond to that?
No, it is not a cultural thing. This cuts across all cultures. You know, during the first African Synod, we had the world media there, very enthusiastic. At the beginning of the Synod, they were asking, is the African church going to go its own way because it's different from the Western? No, we are Catholic. We are part of a big family. Or is the African church going to have its own married clergy? Well, this doesn't concern the African church as such. It concerns the universal church. So celibacy is not an African problem. It's not a cultural problem. It cuts across all cultures. So when we said we are not going to hijack the issue of celibacy as a Catholic church in Africa, the world media lost its interest. So it is a problem, yes, particular to Zambia, particular maybe to Africa at this point in time. But it is not exclusive to Africa. It's a problem that is universal. It's a human problem.
My thanks there to Archbishop George Mapundu of Lusaka, Zambia. And earlier you heard Archbishop Philip Wilson of Adelaide, Australia, and Baroness Patricia Scotland, the former British Attorney General and recently appointed chair of the National Catholic Safeguarding Commission in the UK. And that's all from me, Philippa Hitchin, and from all of us here at the English Programme for today. Join us again at this same time tomorrow or find us on the internet, www.vaticanradio.org/English. You're listening to Vatican Radio. Laudato Jesus Christus.